welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. You know, at some point, the obviousness of it just hits you in the face as you look at something called, quote, the healthcare system, unquote. Man, what an Orwellian doublespeak that word is. And you see the deep-seated corruption, the masses of unwell people who are plugged into it, the rampant mental illness and addiction, the new diseases and disorders that are being invented every day with products with more and more side effects. It's an endless merry-go-round of poor health, bad advice, and a fog of confusion and denial meant to keep the whole sick clown car rolling. I'm not exaggerating, not even a little bit. The massive financial incentives for hospitals, medical centers, and doctors to keep their collective heads in the sand and shut up and go along with it is literally killing us. Doctors are good at going along with it, for sure, with their juicy compensation packages that are keeping them docile and quiet. My take on medical doctors, nearly all of them are smart people, and most of them lack moral courage. They're cowards, and if people are starting to ignore them, especially around the pharmaceutical products that so many of them are pushing, then good. I do not feel sorry for these people. How can you? They have been gatekeepers and purveyors of a system that is making us all sick. I just have one thing to say about this situation. Thank God for the courage of the nurses, men and women like my guest today. They're frontline warriors that take their Hippocratic oath very seriously, something that many doctors have lost sight of. People like my guest today used to be called conspiracy theorists. Today, she looks like a steely-eyed purveyor of truth. Destiny has caught up with us. As more and more people are getting out of the racket of blind trust in doctors, obedience to authority, and big pharma-reliant ill health. Before we get to today's excellent guest, I have a few memes to kick it off. The first one is from Boone Cutler. He says, quote, "The truth is you have some crazy conspiracy theory friends trying harder to save your life, truly help you, and genuinely care about your health and well-being more than any government entity ever has," unquote. And this one from Bob Snee, I don't really know who he is, but this is a pretty good one. He says, quote, "The unvaxxed are clearly not afraid of any variant. The vaxxed are afraid of the variants and the unvaxxed. It's not about vaxxed versus unvaxxed. It's about living in fear versus living in truth. But those living in fear will never get it because that is what fear does," unquote. Oh. And the last one is from the famous author Aldous Huxley. I just want you to consider, he said this 70 years ago, quote, "Medical science has made such tremendous progress that there is hardly a healthy human left," unquote. Oh-ho, unbelievable. Before we get to my guest today, here is a word from our sponsor. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone. Base Campers, I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Kimberly Overton. Kimberly is a registered nurse with a background in critical care and has worked in the healthcare industry for over 28 years. In July of 2021, she founded the Nurse Freedom Network to stand against medical tyranny. And in 2022, Kimberly founded Remnant Nursing, a private membership association providing concierge healthcare services and specializing in the consultation and care of the vaccine injured. She's also the Wednesday host of the popular radio show Nurses Out Loud. Here is my interview with Kimberly Overton. All right, I am here with Kimberly Overton, nurse, truther, podcaster, musician, I found out. Kimberly Overton. Kimberly, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. I appreciate it. I know we've been trying to do it for a while, so I'm glad we finally got connected and we're here.
Yeah, exactly. I've been so excited to have you on, and I know that you're super busy. You've got a podcast, you've got a nurses network. I mean, all this stuff going on. You're back at work now. So for my listeners, like, I first met you, I went down to Charlie Kirk's America Fest last December. I've talked about it on the show, and I just met a bunch of great patriots and truthers and just people that were podcasting and about to podcast, and you and I got connected at James O'Keefe's after party. I wasn't there for very long, but I was kind of out on the patio enjoying the warm Arizona weather. And I saw you and Jody O'Malley, your friend, and she had a book that I bought, and I just started talking to you two, and I just loved what you were about. So Jody and I did an episode a while back. It's been a number of months, but I've been really looking forward to connecting with you as well. And I guess just to start off with, like, tell us, like, where you're at, like, where you're from, where you're at. You know, do you have children? And just kind of like, yeah, what have you been about? And then we'll get into all the Nurse Freedom Network stuff and how that got started after that. But just first, just I guess a little bit of a background on you.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm a born and raised Bostonian. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. But, you know, I've been living in Tennessee for the past 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So like I always say to people, I do consider myself a common law Southerner at this point. Ah. 20 years and I'm back and forth between Tennessee and Texas trying to figure out, you know, where I want to, you know, land. But for now I'm in Tennessee and have been for quite some time. I have a child. Well, I'm going to, you know, stop short of calling him a child. He's about to turn 30, which mm-hmm. is, I'm never going to get used to that.
Yeah.
I can hardly believe it. But honestly, I thank God that he is, because, you know, with as crazy as this world is today, I just couldn't even imagine raising babies on it. So, But I've been in healthcare for 28 years. So basically my entire adult life. I've spent many years as a clinical medical assistant until I decided to finally go back to get my RN. That was around age 35 when I went back to school. But my background in nursing is in critical care. I worked mostly in ICU throughout my entire career. I worked through the pandemic caring for COVID patients. And, you know, so much of what I saw during that time was disturbing to me. You know, what I saw was contributing actually to the death and the devastation that we were seeing happening really around the country. You know, millions of people didn't die in this country due to COVID. They died due to the complete and total medical mismanagement and malfeasance that was occurring.
Yeah. You ended up starting and, you know, it makes sense to me that the nurses were the ones that would come out and create more awareness and have people questioning things. Because I think, and I've talked about this on other podcasts where I've been like, you know, the doctors, I know some good doctors, but also they're the gatekeepers and they're put up on a pedestal so much that they don't want to be. I mean, for every Peter McCullough, there is, you know, 100,000 guys are like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I live in a big house and I'm esteemed and I don't want to start saying the things. But the nurses are the ones that are the front line. If there's some weird stuff going on or they're noticing stuff, they're the ones that are going to step out, even though nurses have a lot to lose as well. It's not like they're like, oh, let me get blackballed. Let me be the one that's pointing all this out. But, you know, thank God for nurses, because you've been the ones that have been the courageous ones throughout all this. So I guess, like, what was happening? You started Nurse Freedom Network and eventually Nurses Out Loud podcast, which I listened to and love, by the way. But what was going on that had you create this? And were you just charging right into it? Or were you like, well, wait a minute, let's give the administration, the hospital administration, time to catch up. Maybe they're just a little flat-footed and they're going to get into alignment with the truth. Or were you like immediate, like they're actively blocking what's happening and we need to sidestep them by starting kind of a nurses movement? Like what was happening that had you sort of create these things or co-create these things with Jody and the rest of the nurses?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it started out in the very beginning. It really wasn't so much that I thought anything nefarious was going on. It was such a confusing time for all of us. And, you know, it was interesting. Just despite all of our best efforts, we were getting all of these patients. They were getting sicker and sicker. And again, despite all of our best efforts, they just weren't improving at all. And we were watching so many of our patients die. And at first I was like, just trying to figure out what was happening. And I, you know, we got policy after policy that would come down. There were ever changing protocols that would come down, and they never made any sense. Mm. It's like every single thing, every new policy or protocol that came down during this time of the pandemic, they just flew completely in the face of everything that we had long known to be true in healthcare. For example, they had us wearing our N95 masks. They would have us wear our masks from our COVID patient room and then go into our non-COVID patient room with the same mask on. Mm. Now, prior to COVID, infection control policy never would have allowed anything like that to happen.
Right.
So little things like that, that just didn't make any sense. And it had me questioning. Another thing that I was questioning was the remdesivir that we were using for these patients. They would have these patients come into the hospital. If you remember, when they started coming into the ER, they would tell them, okay, yes, you have COVID, you tested positive. Okay, go home and basically come back when you can't breathe. Mm. They weren't doing anything for those patients.
Mm.
And now by the time that they would get back to us in the hospital or to me in the ICU, we start giving them this medication, remdesivir, which if you understand that that is an antiviral medication, and it relies on some form of viral replication in order to be effective. But by the time that they got to us, they were already past their replication phase and several days into their symptomatic phase, rendering this medication absolutely useless. Absolutely useless. So I started asking the question, you know, why do we continue to use this medication? And again, this is a medication that was really affecting our patients. It was shutting down their organs.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeing patients go into renal failure. But why are we using it? It's clearly doing more harm than good. Mm-hmm. And my bigger question for everybody in administration and all of the doctors was, why is the government financially incentivizing its use?
Right.
And, you know, the only answer that we would ever get is that it was protocol.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good enough for me.
Yeah.
But Nurse Freedom Network really was born of, I ended up leaving at the bedside because my heart was so burdened by what I saw, what was happening, where we were using this medication. They were pushing for things like early intubation on patients.
Mm-hmm.
That's perhaps the most egregious thing I had ever seen in my nearly 30 years in healthcare. If they were pushing to intubate these patients, not because they were in distress, not because they were in any type of respiratory failure, but they were doing this in an effort to contain the virus. If you understand how a ventilator works, when a patient's placed on a ventilator, it's a closed loop system. So the virus at that point is no longer disseminated into the air.
Mm-hmm.
So they were doing this in an effort to protect the nurses and the doctors to a virus we'd already been exposed to. That doesn't make any sense. And they were doing this knowing that about 80% of those patients we placed on ventilators never made it off.
Right. And I had read that they were incentivized for that as well. Was that the case?
Yes. So yeah. They were incentivized for placing patients on ventilators. Yep. If that patient was kept on a ventilator for 96 hours or more, they got even more money. And typically, you know, we weren't used to seeing patients placed on ventilators for these extended periods. Typically it was like 2 days. And again, it was because they were in distress, but that wasn't the case when they were pushing for this early intubation. I mean, they were in effect signing their death warrant. That's what they were doing. So all of these things that were going on, I said, I couldn't do it any longer. I ended up leaving bedside nursing and I started working from home, doing telephone triage nursing. But again, at one point, I started becoming uncomfortable even doing that because they wanted me to start recommending the COVID vaccine for children.
Yeah.
And not only did they want me to recommend it, they wanted me to use the words safe and effective. They literally gave us a scripted answer. If somebody were to call in and say, should I get this COVID vaccine? Is it safe? Our scripted answer was yes, the vaccine is safe and effective, period.
Right. Wow.
We would have no way of knowing that. We had no long-term safety data. And the short-term data that we were seeing at that point was alarming, to say the very least.
Yeah.
So I ended up resigning from my position. But in between that time, I had started Nurse Freedom Network. And the reason that I did that was because I wanted to take a stand. I knew we had to do something. I didn't know exactly what, but I saw all of these nurses were getting fired from their job for not complying and getting this experimental vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I said, we have to do something. So I started Nurse Freedom Network. It really was never meant to be anything more than just kind of a group of nurses that could kind of get together and, you know, try to navigate what I like to call COVID clown world now.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out what is next for us. But it really quickly evolved. You know, we started just protesting at local hospitals here in the Nashville area that were firing their nurses. And it quickly evolved. It turned into a nationwide movement of nurses that were building advocacy teams all across the country. You know, and then we had started to gain national attention from that. I found myself speaking at all of these events. I spoke out at Defeat the Mandates in both DC and LA, very large events, you know, Next Steps in Atlanta, American Freedom Nurses Summit, all of these different events across the country. And I think that I spoke out so much. Yeah, they gave me a radio show because I just didn't know how to shut my mouth, I guess.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, just to back up a little bit, I also saw, and I don't know if you saw any of this or you just, you know, a lot of times I'm clicking on videos and stuff and articles where people are writing about their experience. But on the ventilator thing, that if they decided to put a patient on a ventilator, there wasn't anything that the family could do, right? So you had these people that I knew were really terrified of going to the hospital, which is, you know, if you're really, yeah, they're like, they're going to kill you. They're going to put you on a ventilator and your wife's not going to be able to stop them, you know? And it's like, so people were really, it's like the message during all that lockdown weirdness, you know, surreal stuff was like, don't, whatever, however sick you get, like, just deal with yourself. Don't go to the hospital because they might say ventilator time. And then you're a mess, you know, you're fucked basically, you know? Yeah. And so, which is weird. You don't think, you know, I mean, I think people have woke up to the fact that that is not a very safe place to be when they decide they're mandating stuff, when they decide they're incentivized for a particular procedure. God help you if you go in there and you don't have somebody that's a loudmouth saying, hell no, my husband's not going, you know, but you almost need a lawyer in there, right? It was a super scary time, I think. And I think it's left people a little, it might be a good thing that people are like starting to rethink, you know, oh, if something's wrong, I'm just going to the hospital. People are like, you know, I don't know if that's where I want to go right now. Like, who do I know that really understands health? I don't know if people around you were starting to talk that way. You probably hear a different take being a nurse than I did just as a lay person with people around me going, don't go to the hospital. They're ventilating people like crazy, you know? So,
and that's my biggest message to people. I tell people this all the time. If you can avoid the hospital, if you have to go into the hospital, make sure that you have an advocacy plan in place. Yeah. Because we saw during COVID, again, people were being systematically murdered for profit.
Yeah.
And I have not found a nice way to sugarcoat that and make it sound any nicer or, I guess, less insane than it sounds. But that's exactly what was happening. That is what we were witnessing and we saw happening over and over again in these hospitals. And so, yes, people are distrustful of this mainstream medical system, and rightly so. They absolutely should be. That's part of, you know, out of Nurse Freedom Network, beyond the advocacy, my larger vision for that was to be able to create opportunities for nurses who were ready to come out of this broken system and to be able to create something that we could provide true patient-centered care that focused on prevention, on, you know, not just managing symptoms of a disease, but getting to the actual root cause of what's happening. So we do that through our Remnant Healthcare. We have a 501(c)(1)A private membership association, but we also provide advocacy services. And as I mentioned during the pandemic, we saw the value of this. It could literally be the difference between life and death. So I think more and more as people become more disillusioned with the healthcare system, they understand that they are going to be, if they get sick with COVID, they're going to be safer at home with a nurse than they are going into the hospital in many cases. So we have had to do that where we've placed nurses in the home. Maybe they need a little bit of supportive care. They need some IV hydration. Maybe they need some oxygen. We can get all of that set up and care for the patient in the home. Mm-hmm. And were to escalate to a point where an admission was, you know, likely needed, our nurse goes right there with them and they have an advocate at their side throughout their admission. And again, there's value in that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've said this before that even the term healthcare, quote unquote, it's almost an Orwellian term, mm-hmm. you know, from 1984, where they use a term to mean the opposite, right? It's like the whole system, the pharmaceutical system, you know, it wasn't this behemoth when I was a kid. In other words, you know, there wasn't these weird, you know, incentives with all this money. You didn't see all of these commercials every night. If you're watching the football game, you're going to see, you know, six commercials about like pharmaceutical drugs with all their side effects. Yep. And, you know, how did we get here? Because most Americans, I'm realizing, like if I see somebody and I start talking to them and they seem kind of off immediately now, I never used to think this, but now I think, I wonder how many different pharmaceuticals they're on, you know, yep. 5, 10, 15, 20. I wonder how vaccinated they are. Did they get all of them? Did they get two of them? Anybody that seems kind of off or can't make eye contact. I mean, yeah, it could be an autistic case or ADHD, but I also that's pharmaceutical driven a lot of times, I think, or vaccine driven. I start to realize that I'm just around so many people that are not healthy. And when I look at the schools, they're not teaching anything about health. They've even taken away physical education. Like they don't even let them run around outside and get fresh air, which is healthy for kids. I mean, everything right now to me looks like it's geared to make people sick so they can make lots of money on sick people. And if they vaccinate them enough, and this is, you know, people say, oh, you've got your tin hat on, but I'm like, well, I'm looking at what's in front of me. Like I'm looking at all of the people that are way overweight that aren't, you know, all, you know, like a third of young people can't pass a basic physical test to go into the military. And that's growing. So you have all these people that are out of shape. You have all these Americans that are on, I mean, I know personally people that are on 10, 15 pharmaceuticals. And if you ask them, what's this one for? I don't know. What's this one for? I don't know. What's this one for? Oh, I know what that one's for. That's for my anxiety. Okay, what about this one? I don't know what that one's for. What are you taking it for? Well, the doctor's telling me to take it. I'm like, he's incentivized to get you on these things forever and ever and ever and to keep chasing symptoms. Like to me, the it's so obvious. All you have to do is watch one pharmaceutical commercial. And they give you a list of the things that it like possible side effects, and it lists you like 15 horrific side effects. So do you think none of those are going to show up if you start taking this thing for anxiety? Probably some of them. And then once you have those, the doctor says, oh, you have those. Yeah, that's common. We often will prescribe these two to offset that. Well, what are the side effects of that? Well, you know, there's a long list there too. It's so shammy and obvious, but people are like, disillusion, like that. I think it's part of it. I know this is a long rant, Kim. You could jump in on any of this, but also it's this like lack of like standing up for yourself. Like, why am I giving authority to these doctors that are incentivized to prescribe me all these things that don't help my health? Like, screw these guys, screw the doctors. You know, if you need a surgery, okay, but don't go for general health. These guys are not giving you things that are helping you, right?
Well, exactly. It's Tony, it's a complete and total sick care system. There's nothing healthy about this. It's a total sick care system. And you hit the nail on the head with all of that, you know, and when it comes down to it, it's programming.
Yeah.
It is all programming. So we've been so conditioned, especially in this country, right, to believe and accept that chronic disease is just part of life.
Yeah.
It's just something that we deal with. And the way that we manage that is with prescription medications. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, I remember I don't watch TV. I don't watch the news. I don't watch TV anymore. And I haven't for the last 4 years. But I was getting a manicure at the nail salon and they had a TV on. And there were six ads. Five out of six of the ads were pharmaceutical. Five out of six pharmaceutical. And like you said, they list out that laundry list of horrific side effects. And we're so programmed to think, but those won't ever happen. You know, they just have to say those, but they're so rare and it'll never happen. But yeah, we're all just accepting that chronic disease is just a part of life. And this is how we manage it with prescription medications. I can tell you that my average patient when I worked in the ICU was on between 25 and 30 prescription medications.
Oh my God. That's even worse than I thought. I would have said 10 to 15. It's triple that.
Well, by the time they're a chronic ICU, you know, ICU, they're on a whole lot more. But yeah, to your point, we're starting out earlier and earlier with these kids because if, you know, ADHD became a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
In probably more so the 90s, but then we started seeing all of these children put on these SSRI. Then we're, you know, you can't not make a correlation. I make the correlation all the time to the rise in school shootings.
Yeah. I think they're on SSRI. Oh, totally, totally. And I think in our lifetime, Kimberly, I believe they're circling around it, but I believe there will be a slam dunk case that everybody's going to know about. Like the mainstream media won't be able to keep it contained because I see it growing already with like Turtles All the Way Down and stuff like that. I think there's going to be, even for the normies, they're going to understand that, you know what, this rise in all of these things in kids, the autism and the ADHD and the, you know, Asperger's syndrome, like all of the things that you see that you didn't see 25 years ago in these rising numbers, they're going to know it's the vaccine schedule. And parents are going to be like, I do not want to give my kid a bunch of these shots with a chance that he's going to end up vastly different. Right. And I think like the work of Paul Thomas and stuff, I believe it's already here, but I think for parents, you know, I mean, there's a generation of parents that are just that didn't see it coming. I mean, I got my son, you know, I would have handled a lot differently. Like he didn't get any of the COVID shots and he didn't get some of the stuff that they say, oh, he's a teenager. He should have this one, you know, the one that caught HPV and stuff. We HPV, didn't do that. Yeah. But I got strong armed by my pediatrician because she was a quote unquote good pediatrician. Like she had a waiting list to go see her because she's so good. And then she basically said, when we were like, wait a minute, do we have to do these all at once? All these vaccines seems like a lot. I wasn't awake yet. I was circling my own awakening going, what is going on? Why do we have to do so many of these shots at once? And she basically said, you know, if you don't get these on my schedule, you're out, you know, go find another doctor.
Because
and
they I are was financially incentivized.
Yeah. And I was scared. I finally made it into a good, you know, pediatrician. I didn't want to lose it. I didn't want to be a bad dad, you know, but now looking back, I'm like, shame on you for doing that. Like, and I think she moved away. I think something happened and all of a sudden this great, you know, physician that everybody wanted, and she moved away with her tail between her legs at some point. So, yeah, I don't know. It just, I believe that their parents of kids that are coming now, like the newborns now, I hope all these conversations, these podcasts and the books that are coming out, I think it's common. I think more and more parents are going, I'm going to pump the brakes on this. And if a physician tries to strong arm me, I heard Tony on a podcast or I heard Kimberly and Jody or whatever, all the different things, they're going to be way more informed than I was and they won't give in. They'll be like, uh-uh, I'm not doing that. You're not going to strong arm me with your weird incentives.
Yeah, I think that's the silver lining to COVID. If there is a silver lining to COVID, it is that these just, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, big pharma, and these captured government agencies, they have finally overplayed their hands. Yeah. And, you know, in doing so, so many of us are waking up. I was not anti-vaccine coming into this fight, mm-hmm. right? I thought this was a new shot. And I'm like, wait, I think we need some time. And I would never want anything mandated. But yeah, we're waking up to what's been happening for really decades.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I didn't come in anti-vax, but I'm sure as hell leaving that way.
Yeah.
I mean,
totally.
Because now I've actually done the research. You would be really surprised to know. I mean, the only education that we receive as nurses on vaccines is safe, effective, and yep. necessary. That's yep. it. And the doctors receive little more than that.
I know.
I think we always just really implicitly trusted that, you know, these people that were in these positions in the vaccine industry were thinking, well, this is not, you know, this isn't our realm. We're going to stay in our wheelhouse. And yeah. that these people were actually doing their due diligence. Well, that's not the case. You might think that it takes a lot to get a vaccine to market as far as approval. It really doesn't, because right. it's not the same as a drug. It's not the same as a drug. It's considered a biologic, which is, it has a whole different set of regulations, and they are not as stringent as a prescription medication. So a lot of those safety testing and trials that you think or just assume are happening are not.
Well, and your nurse's education, you know, they say basically, look, the vaccine schedule, just say safe and effective. When I read Dr. Paul Thomas's books, I was shocked. I think most ordinary people, patients, you know, they think, well, if the doctors are saying safe, effective, that is because they've done a deep dive in their medical school. So they looked at it. They looked at all of it. You know what I mean? And Paul Thomas is like, no, they basically just say the same thing to the doctors. Like, just say it's safe. Trust us. We're the good guys. We've done the studies. If you need to do a deep study, here it is. They're too busy to be going down rabbit holes as a young medical student, right?
Exactly. And so, that's the thing. And that's why they keep these doctors so busy, where they're seeing seven you know, 10 patients in, you know, a 15-minute period or whatever it is, because none of these doctors, again, I've worked in this industry 28 years. If you think these doctors are doing their own independent research, you are sorely mistaken. They are not.
Yeah.
They are just taking, and they are blindly following what is handed down from the CDC, the FDA, all of those things. And it might be, you know, that they are just completely trusting in it. And my big question throughout all of this, you know, is it like, are they just complicit in the lie, or do they not know any better when they absolutely should?
Right.
And which
right.
of those scenarios is more frightening to you?
Right, right. Somebody pointed out to me, and this is not a knock on doctors, but somebody said, you know, well, think about it. Who goes to medical school? It's the smart kids that follow orders, that obey, you know, they do good in school because they check a lot of the boxes to do good in school. You don't have rebel doctors because they're like, I'm not going to get bad grades if I'm speaking out and being a pain in the ass. So they're like really smart. But they're not particularly, you know, they like the status. They like, you know, I just need to check these boxes, and then I'm going to be taught bedside manner. And so they're not the most, they're not necessarily going down rabbit holes, let's just say, yeah. right? They're not, I don't want to deal with that. If you tell me, trust the science. The other thing that I found out from Paul Thomas too, is that the pharmaceutical industry, now we know, heavily funds the medical schools. You know, they fund the textbooks. They can edit, they can put things in there, they can put the study they want on the vaccine, whatever one, they can include the study. So if you're a medical student, you're glancing at things, you get what they want you to know, which is it's safe and effective. Trust us, we're the good guys. We're the pharmaceutical industry. And it's like, wow, now that you see the corrupt incentives, you can't unsee it. You see it everywhere.
You cannot unsee it. You can't. And now these large hospital corporations are buying nursing schools. There's a nursing program. It's a Galen School of Nursing. Well, that's owned by HCA. Mm. So if you think that these nursing schools that are owned by these large hospital corporations are going to be teaching about informed consent, about autonomy, and about, you know, patient rights, you're completely mistaken. They're going to teach you to be a hospital employee and a yes, 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 sir, yes, sir, and follow the protocol. Don't color outside the lines. Don't ask any questions.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. What do you, you know, I didn't know if I was going to mention this, but I think I will, just to give you a chance to weigh in on a little bit. What do you think? I've done a couple of, navigating transgenderism. Those were recent episodes. I had a social worker, Pamela Garfield Yeager, on. We finally unpacked that. I've had Dr. Mark McDonald, who's a child psychiatrist. So we finally got a couple of really good episodes around this transgender, this Marxist agenda. What are you seeing on the healthcare end? Because, they call it gender affirming care, which is, again, is a euphemism. It could have been right out of George Orwell's book. Let's castrate. Let's cut off breasts. Let's cut off genitals. But we'll call it gender affirming care because that'll appease the people that think, it sounds so nice. It sounds like we're doing the right thing by these kids, but it covers up this kind of weird, grotesque massacre. And I'll just give you a chance to weigh in on it from the healthcare side. I've kind of said plenty, especially in the last, let's say, 6 episodes. So I don't want to riff too much on it, but I wanted to give you a chance since I emailed you the question and says, I might mention it, might not. And you said, no, go ahead. So I'll give you a chance just to, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. We actually just did an episode on this myself and Nurse David Wayne. We did an episode on, just gender affirming care. And I can't believe that we have gotten here as a society where instead of treating mental illness, which is what this is, body, dysmorphia, all of these are mental illnesses. You can look them up and DSM-4, they are mental illnesses. They need to be treated and treated with respect and compassion. Absolutely. But what's happening is, they are coming up with this gender affirming care again to align with this new worldview, I guess, that we have. But there's no regard to the long-term effects, right? Of things like hormone therapy, puberty blockers I've seen them administered to children as young as 8 and 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right. These types of treatments, they have irreversible impacts on fertility, bone density, on their physical development, and they are butchering these children. These doctors it's butchering.
Yeah.
They're like that, cutting off breasts, performing these irreversible surgeries. These are children. And I think what's really important to understand is, and I don't want to paint with such a broad brush, but you have to be, as parents, very cognizant of what is happening. When you think you can trust your doctors, you think you can trust your teachers, and we would all love that to be true, but you have to be so vigilant with your children because you only have one chance with these kids, right? And you have to be their advocate. They're trying to separate parents out of the room when these children go in for their well visits.
Yep.
They want to speak to the children alone.
Yep.
Do not leave your child alone with these healthcare professionals. Again, you think you can trust them? Please don't. They are given questions to ask on whether or not they feel like they're a girl or a boy. Like these types of questions. These are the things that they are, and these are the same things that they're teaching in schools.
I know. And well, it's
disturbing.
They're preying on their, it's confusing to go through puberty, right? Like you're already confused and insecure. And if you add in a bunch of these messages about, it'll be so much more magical if you want to change genders, which is kind of like what the kids are picking up on TikTok and in their, it's so nefarious. It's so undermining just their natural development. You're not going to be 100% sure of who you are when you're 13, 14 years old. And they're going for the Achilles heel. You said don't trust the healthcare profession on this. And Pamela Garfield Yeager says, don't trust the school counselors.
No.
They're in on it. And she's a former 14-year school counselor. Yes. She goes, they're in on it. Don't trust
them.
They all are.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the medical system, the educational system. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, I understand it's a lot. Take your kids out of the cesspool of an education, public education.
Absolutely.
System. If you can put them in private homeschool, figure it out. Like I said, you get one chance with these children and you have to save these children. They've destroyed an entire generation of children. They really have, starting from, I want to say the mid or early to mid 90s on until today. And we have got to stand for these people, for these babies. again, that are being butchered. They don't know any better. And the parents are being bullied into allowing this type of gender-affirming care because they are actually telling these parents that their children are going to commit suicide if you don't let them cut their breasts off.
Yeah. I know. I know people like that. Parents that they've got a trans kid now, and it was that. It was like they had to. They felt like they had to go along with it. There wasn't the resources a few years back that there is now, right? People are sounding the alarm bells, but back then they got blindsided that first wave, right? They're like, I don't want to be, you know, and they really separated the state and this apparatus put itself between the kids and their parents. And then, and the parents really, you know, now there's more books and podcasts and conversations. So I think anything coming now, I think there's enough stuff out there for parents, I hope, where they would push back. But to your point, I'm hearing more and more people say, get your kids out of schools. Here in Seattle, they're closing up schools all over the place because parents are taking their kids out because they don't trust them. Right.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
It absolutely has to, because you have to understand, like, this system, the government, really, your children become almost a ward of the state, like from cradle to grave.
I know.
You know, we're registering them with a social security number. They become part of the state. And then CPS is taken in, is weaponized by hospital systems, by school systems. We've seen it happen where parents have kind of pushed back against this gender stuff, and then CPS gets called, the child gets taken away.
It's terrifying.
Really and truly is. And that's why I said earlier, I am so glad that I don't have a child in this day and age.
Me too.
Because I can't even imagine how I would navigate this. I couldn't imagine homeschooling.
I know.
My son was, but you know, if it were today, the way things are now, I would figure it out.
Me too. Yeah, right. I know. You know, one thing that, just shifting gears just a little bit, I was scrolling through. I do listen to your show, not every week, but there's certain episodes that really catch my attention. I love clicking on them. Yeah. I saw you had one where you were doing one on regaining the nourishing traditions that kept our ancestors healthy and strong. This is something that's like sorely needed right now. We need like a throwback. We need to build, you know, a growing population that really understands health and is not taking pharmaceuticals and is like just doing really healthy things. So what are some of the things that keep people strong and healthy? What is your coaching on that? Because I think people we're missing that a little bit in the messaging, because it's underground in little nooks and crannies, but I don't think we hear it spoken enough.
Yeah. Well, it's the horrible and horrific, you know, standard American diet that we have in this country now. And we've got to go back. It was a great episode that we did. We had Sally Fallon Morell, who's the founder and president of the Weston A. Price Foundation. They do a lot of education on kind of getting back to the basics and going back to the way our ancestors ate, which is what the research of Weston A. Price, when he had gone around, you know, the world and found out these indigenous people were so much healthier than others. And he was trying to figure out why. But we've got to get back to eating these nutrient dense foods.
Yeah.
Right. These are, God gave us everything that we need. Mm-hmm. Okay. Everything that we need, these processed foods, we have got to move away from those. But everything that we need, they are packed with vitamins, minerals, the healthy fats. Get away from these inflammatory seed oils. Yeah. We've been told that butter is bad, you know, and margarine, which is one molecule away from plastic, is supposed to be healthier.
Yeah.
We have to get back to the ways that our ancestors ate. So that's, you know, grass-fed meats, eating organic vegetables, fermented foods is a big one, raw dairy, all of these things that they have taught us is bad. Cholesterol isn't a bad thing. We need cholesterol for our brain health.
Yeah.
We absolutely need it. So, you know, they're telling us that cholesterol is bad and this, that, and the other thing. And then they're putting all of America on statin drugs, which are horrifying, horrific medications to lower cholesterol when we actually need this cholesterol again for our brain health. So we've really got to start just eating food that nourishes us.
Absolutely. Right?
Those foods nourish every cell in our body. That's what we have to do, is we have to break away from the processed foods and just, and I, you know, there are some people that will say carnivore is the way to go. Other people only want to do plant-based. I personally believe you need a mixture of all of those.
I do too. Yeah, I like that. I heard somebody say, I can't remember if it was my friend Janelle or somebody said, a good guide, stay away from the middle aisles in the grocery store. Yeah. Go on the edges where the grass-fed meat and the meat is and the organic vegetables. Just shop at those two and you're going to be fine. I have an interesting story. I forgot when you mentioned statins. So I have a good friend of mine from high school, and I talked to him, and his wife is a urologist, right? But he's not on it, and he doesn't like any of the pharmaceutical stuff. He stays away from it. So he went to see a concierge. They're pretty wealthy because she's a urologist and he's got a financial business, right? So he's got a concierge doctor that is on call. And so he went and got a complete blood work. And the doctor was like, oh, you know, you're getting high cholesterol. Your cholesterol is too high. I want to put you on statins. So he wrote him a prescription. And my friend goes, oh, okay. What does he do? He does not go on statins. Instead, he gets on the internet and he starts to look up all the foods that lower your cholesterol, right? And so he does that. He starts eating stuff that naturally lowers your cholesterol. And I'm not saying what is the optimal level, because you said, you know, cholesterol is not bad, but his doctor thought it was too high. So he goes back 6 months later, doctor redoes the blood test. My friend doesn't say he never cashed in the prescription. He lowers his cholesterol down into the healthy thing. And his doctor goes, I told you that statin was going to be a miracle worker for a little. Look how much you lowered your cholesterol. And so my friend goes, I didn't cash that in. I just did it with diet. Rather than the doctor go, oh my God, like you would think a physician in that position would go, you have got to write down what you did diet so I can share that with my other patients, right? Even if he has no intention of ever doing that, if I'm the physician, I'm like, oh shit. You got to tell me, like, what did you do exactly so I know? Because I'm interested in people's health. No, the doctor says you should still get it on statins because I think we can bring that down even more. And my friend just goes, are you kidding me? And then I go, what'd you do? He goes, I fired him. I basically said, I'm not coming back, because that is not a reaction I want out of my doctor, that you're still wanting to prescribe me this thing after I lowered it with diet. Yeah. Can you believe that?
We never talk about that. It's interesting because, like, when you have high blood pressure, they will tell you to be careful if you're on medication to control your blood pressure. They say, no, part of our education is not to eat grapefruit, because grapefruit naturally lowers your blood pressure and they don't want your blood pressure to bottom out. And here's me just saying, well, why don't we just have them eat the grapefruit?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, why is this not the education that we're giving? And, you know, so much of that is, and that's why I tell people, it is really and truly, honest to God, it is a sick care system that does nothing to keep anyone well. And that's what the biggest part of why I wanted to start Remnant Healthcare was, because all of our practitioners that come in, we're all trained in functional medicine and we're trained in getting to the root cause and eradicating that. Oftentimes it is through things like diet, exercise. I would be, you know, wager to say probably 80% of it is nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm going to ask you about, maybe resources. I gravitate, I don't really go to the doctor, but I have my friend Janelle and my friend Dr. D. They're in the naturopathic medical world, right? And I just so appreciate their wisdom about health. And it's always seen as any symptom you have, it's not, you don't chase symptoms. They don't do that. They see it as a sign, you know, a whisper before it becomes a scream. And they always make these great recommendations because they have this whole history of helping steering people towards health. And they're so wise. And I trust them immensely, not blind trust. They have built up trust. They've earned my trust in that the suggestions they make are always naturopathic suggestions, never pharmaceuticals, unless absolutely necessary on Dr. D's side, which it's not. It's almost always, there's almost always a natural remedy or a dietary suggestion that makes these little changes in my health that optimizes my health. And that's what I want. That's what doctors really ought to be, but not, they're not, because they're so married to the pharmaceutical sickness industry that they can't see the whole person. And so I always gravitate and suggest people go that the direction I go, because I just feel like the pharmaceuticals will start to drop off. They'll start to be seen as a person that's got natural health if they're allowed to have it, right? And you need people to assist you, because it's hard to do it on your own. You need somebody in your corner, because there's just so many, you know, the foods and the just the media, there's so many things that aren't out for your health that you got to put a couple people in your corner that really understand it. So that's my little riff and my little shout out to Janelle Hartman here and Dr. D, who helps so many people. But I wanted to give you a chance, like, where do you point people when they're like, well, if I'm not going to do the doctor, if I'm starting to question pharmaceuticals, how do I get somebody in my corner who really understands this stuff?
Well, and that's exactly what we're doing at Remnant Healthcare. And so I always would, it's remnanthealthcare.org. We are a private membership association. So we are completely outside of the mainstream medical, but we have incredible practitioners. We have nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians, homeopaths, naturopaths, all of these people that are working with clients every day, and they are really making such a difference for them. And our goal is to just help guide people, you know, on this journey towards reaching their highest and their healthiest potential. And, you know, we're making a huge difference for people. And I'm so proud of that. And what I love about it is that we're also taking these nurses that, you know, got into nursing because they wanted to help people. By the end of 2020, we were all, you know, with our heads spinning saying, what is this? This isn't what we signed up for. What we're doing doesn't help people. What we're doing doesn't get anybody well. And we're taking these nurses and we're giving them another opportunity to learn how to nurse from a different perspective. To learn how to, so we have that incredible program, Melissa Schreibfeder's program is who we partner with, Functional Nurse Academy. We send all of our nurses, we have these entrepreneurial opportunities for nurses to come in under the Remnant Healthcare umbrella, get trained in functional medicine, get trained in homeopathy, and then have this incredible, you know, practice with the support of the entire Remnant team that helps to get people healthy and well and keep them that way.
You know, if there was a big push for actual health, the insurance companies, it would cost them a fraction of the cost to insure people's visits to these doctors and nurses and naturopathic doctors and homeopathic doctors. If you're going to encourage health, the cost of the medical system would come plummeting down. But the insurance companies seem to be in on the whole scam too, right?
Oh,
they're like,
exactly.
Yeah,
the biggest scam there ever was. Insurance.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I can't believe what I pay in insurance as a healthy American. Like, I don't ever need any of that, but I just have to shell out to have the insurance just in case something happens, you know. So, well, Kimberly, thanks so much for coming on. It's just so great to chat with somebody so. Aligned with truth and aligned with humanity. Where can people find you? Where would you like to point them? Where can they find Nurses Out Loud podcast? Like any final words and where can people find you and your work?
Sure, absolutely. So Remnant Healthcare is remnanthealthcare.org. You can follow me on social media on just about every social. It's at Kimberly_NFN for Nurse Freedom Network. Mm-hmm. So at Kimberly_NFN on socials. And then, of course, we have Nurses Out Loud. You can find us on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. So that's americaoutloud.news/nursesoutloud. And we are on air Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Encore at 11 p.m. Eastern.
Beautiful. Well, Kimberly, thank you so much. So great to chat with you. You're going to be at America Fest this year again or no?
Probably not. I am back to where I'm doing hospice nursing now. So my travel schedule is a little bit, I don't have the freedom I have had in the past. But hopefully we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll hold down the fort. I'm planning on being there. I think post-election, it's going to be wild and woolly down there. I need to go down there because I live in Seattle and it's just overrun with woke. So I need a shot of patriotism at least once a year. So anyways, keep up the great work. Thank you so much for all the work you do on behalf of humanity. Just so appreciate what you and the rest of the nurses are leading. And I just think you're on the cutting edge of health here. Actual health and not the healthcare system, which is making all of us sick. So thank you so much, Kimberly. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Don't forget to show your patriotism and support for our sponsor at www.standupnowapparel.com. And don't forget to use the code BASECAMP for a discount and free shipping. Thank you, BASECAMPers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.